Hello, everybody. My name is Ben Parr. I am the moderator for this lovely panel. I am a columnist and commentator at CNET, as well as a startup founder. Previously, I was the editor of Mashable. But this is not about me. This is about politics and social. And I would like the amazing panelists here to my right to introduce themselves very briefly, a little bit about who you are, what you do, and what makes you awesome.
I'm Mark Blumenthal, senior polling editor at the Huffington Post, which, now you're not going to hit me if I say something.
I have nothing mean to say about the Huffington Post.
No, not about Post. I don't want to puff my company.
Oh, go ahead. No, knock yourself out. Yeah, this is the time when you can puff. Go puff.
Anyway, I write about polls and politics for the Huffington Post. I created, along with some other folks, a website called pollster.com. In 2006, which HuffPost bought out 2 years ago. And before that, I blogged as Mystery Pollster, also my Twitter handle now. For about 20 years before that, I was a campaign pollster, mostly for Democratic candidates. And I suppose the one thing that's a constant throughout my career is I was a political junkie when I was 12 years old. I worked on campaigns when I was in high school and college. Now I get to do it for a living, which is cool.
Hi, my name is Vishal, and I'm the co-founder of Viral Heat. We do social media management for small and medium businesses.
Did you guys do Why You're Awesome?
Yes, and Why You're Awesome.
Jeez, man. Because I need time to think about mine. All right, you're going to skip that part. My name is Chris Liu. Can you hear?
Hello.
My name is Chris Liu, and I'm the founder of Echo. And Echo is a real-time streaming platform, so the platform can be used to make things like real-time comments on the Washington Post, or something even more intellectual like real-time streams of information around Hulk Hogan and John Cena, the wrestlers, on WWE.com. Both great customers, but vastly different. Why am I awesome? Dang, it's a self sort of important thing. I kiteboard, I snow kite. Yeah, those are awesome things, aren't they? Yeah.
I would say so. Just don't do them at the same time. That might be painful.
Yeah, since you may need to, how many people have ADD or triple ADD? Yeah, great. So that means you're probably tweeting, emailing, whatever. Look up Maitai, M-A-I-T-A-I, and snow kite on YouTube, and you'll see some of the snow kiting that we did a couple weeks ago in Utah. It's just crazy sick.
I love how he's not pitching up. He's like, I'm pitching my Maitai.
Yeah.
All right. So
don't pitch me.
Exactly.
Maitai.
So very quickly, how the panel... we're going to have a big section for Q&A, so start thinking to put your questions now. Panelists, give them some questions, and I'm going to bid them if they go too long or if they are too self-promotional. Beyond that, everyone just have fun. That's why we're here at South By, right? If you're here to learn, I mean, anyway. So why don't we start a little bit about political campaigns, and I wanted to ask all of you how you think the role of social media has changed for politics between the last election cycle in 2008, the last presidential election cycle, and in 2012. And let's start right over here.
I think that's a story that's sort of being written now by the campaigns. One aspect of political campaigns that's sort of a constant is that most of the activity happens at the end of the even-numbered year. And we also find out who did the best. So that's one way of saying I'm not sure who's doing the best sort of social work. And how much it's changed since 2008. I think that the process has been more evolutionary for the last two or three years than revolutionary. But we really saw the promise of social media in 2008. The short version of the story I think most of you know is that politics is by its almost by definition is social. It's not a solitary pursuit. If you want to make anything happen in politics, whether it's electing a candidate or moving a bill through Congress or whatever, it's about putting people together and building coalitions and building community. And for years and years and years, at least when I was in the 80s, when I was working on campaigns as a college student, the tool we had was the telephone. That was it. And everybody in the sort of struck me at the time. Everybody in the campaign, whether it was the candidate or the field organizer, had the same process, which was get a list of people, get their phone numbers, call them, and ask them to do something. If you were the candidate, you were asking them for money. If you were the organizer, you were asking them to knock on doors or whatever. And social media, you know, from the internet, just simple email, to Facebook and Twitter and everything else, have been like accelerant on that process and really kind of revolutionized the way campaigns work. And my point was, I think since 2008, the change has been more evolutionary, but we'll see as this year plays out.
Yeah, I think the biggest change has been that the networks have grown a lot. Like Facebook had about 100 million users in 2008, and now they have about over 800 million users. And same for Twitter. Like Twitter was very small in 2008, and now they have over 500 million users. So I think one of the biggest thing is it has become a platform where candidates can engage more. It was more about reach in 2008, and it's now more about engagement and how can they get their message out and get more and more activists going for their messages. So I think that's one big difference. The second is, since there are so many people out there now, it's become a massive platform for fundraising as well. You can get activists to line up and kind of get them excited about your cause and excited about your topics and get them motivated, basically. So I think that's another big change.
Yeah. I think you guys covered it for the most part. I'd say also that on the back end, these organizations are mining the data in different ways. So a lot of the changes that they're making could be silent, right? They're listening to us and responding by changing their message. And so it's subtle but powerful on the back end. It's not just that a candidate might tweet something, right? If they can understand what their demographic is saying, right, listening to them, they can change their message. But I think you guys covered it pretty well.
So you brought up data, so I want to ask a little bit about data's new role in politics. So the Obama campaign is actually quite famous for having an office in Chicago focused almost solely on number crunching for the election. They do the sentiment analysis. They're analyzing the social impact. They're analyzing everything in order to like come up with trends in that. Do you think that has had an impact on the Obama campaign last cycle and this cycle? And do you think other campaigns are going to follow that lead? Is that the future of politics?
Yeah, I think so, definitely. Last campaign, it was more about understanding like what is resonating for the other candidates and what are the topics that people want to learn more about. So candidates could message based on what the audience wants to hear or what are the topics of interest. And I think using sentiment and using some of the data mining, candidates can, this election, can use it for like for a pre-event and a post-event. Like pre-event, like what does the audience want to listen about? What are the main topics? Is it immigration? Is it economy? And post-event, like did the speech or did the event hit the mark? Like were they able to cover the topics that the audience were interested in? What was the sentiment like? So kind of getting those insights and kind of looking at social media data to get these insights is definitely going to be very key in this elections.
Let me add one thought. Is there anyone here from Slate.com? I assume not. The best reporting on this has been done by a guy named Sasha. It's either Eisenberg or Isenberg, who writes for Slate, who sort of been on the big data campaign beat, as it were. There's something that Obama's doing that they've given this code name, Project Narwhal. And what's interesting about it is in the 08 campaign, and I preface this by saying the Obama campaign in 08 was just very, very well organized and had lots of resources, money, and people. So they did everything. They looked, you know, they had some folks who did nothing but try to get Obama on every social media platform in the universe. And they got every piece of data they could, and they tried to make sense out of it. But one of the things they weren't able to do was merge different sources of data. So they had this massive field organizing campaign that was working off of voter lists and enhancing them and doing really innovative stuff where, for kind of the first time, at least on the Democratic side, if you knocked on someone's door, you knew what the person's answer had been when the Kerry campaign had knocked on their door 4 years before, maybe, or it's all saved, right? So the campaign person has a phone or some device, and they can update that list as they're making their contact, and they keep track of that with all the other quote-unquote voter contact that the campaign does. But anything that gleaned from social media or from Facebook, from anywhere, or even from email replies, they were all in their buzzword alert silos. They were all in different places, and they weren't put together. So this Project Narwhal is aiming to put it all together so that the canvasser knows who's emailed the campaign, donated the campaign, tweeted about the, whatever they can do to put all of that together. And it's, at least from an observer's point of view, this looks like, you know, mostly hype at the moment because we don't really know what it can do. But that's one of the more exciting developments of the cycle so far.
Just a side note, I wonder who decided to call it Project Narwhal. not that the animal's not awesome, but anyway. I want to ask a little bit about its impact on fundraising quickly. What do you think social has done to the fundraising cycles?
It's interesting. It's almost seemed like it's broken the fundraising down into micro little units, right? I think the last Obama campaign showed that you can raise enormous amounts of money by a $5 or $10 donation as long as you can hit scale. And social allows you to get that scale super quickly. And not to sort of move the question sideways, but social, I was thinking about this earlier today, social media is getting credit for doing a lot of things really well, like I think the last Obama campaign and Tunisia and what have you. But there's also a correlation between how complicated the task is and how effective social is. So in terms of awareness and getting someone to give 10 bucks or whatever, or to vote a specific way, those are easy things. But social media hasn't exactly proven itself to be as powerful with things like Occupy. Right, it mobilized Occupy, but what is the actual political outcome from that? Right, the issues are so complicated with mortgages and, you know, restructuring finance and whatever. So social media, you can tweet all day long about Occupy Wall Street, but what is the tangible political change that happened? And I'm yet to see that unfold, unless it's a very simple, minute thing that you're asking someone to do.
So that's that. I have a related question to that. So raise your hand if you've seen the Kony video. Like half the room, who has no idea what the hell the Kony video is? Be honest. So the quick way is this 30-minute YouTube video that has over 80 million views in the last like week and a half that is about Joseph Kony, the a warlord in Uganda who has committed lots of terrible crimes, and now there's a lot of attention on him because of this one video from a charity that has been spreading attention and all that kind of thing. So I just wanted to ask, like, what do you think of that phenomenon? Do you think that's going to actually result in, like, something tangible, or is that one of those complicated things where maybe people are aware, but they don't actually do something like, they nothing is done to actually get them out of power?
Yeah, this is exactly the case, right? I mean, yes, you can get celebrities to tweet about it and get attention to the area, but quite frankly, the continent is in trouble. It's systemically corrupt. Right, it's missing major institutions. It's got poverty. It's got AIDS. It's a gigantic, big problem that you cannot in 140 characters tweet away, and you'll get some attention to it, right? And there'll be a spike. But what will be the change in Africa 6 months from now or 18 months from now? And I would say probably from this, very little.
Anyone else?
A smart person told me a long time ago that politics is the art of the possible. And for a political campaign or for an interest group or for someone who just wants to change the world, the fact that you can't alleviate poverty in a tweet isn't a good reason to not take steps in that direction. So, and I'm not disagreeing, but the Kony video bouncing around and getting 80 million views or whatever, that is a tangible thing. That's 80 million people learning something. That's a message communicated for free. That goes to, how many of you were in the Al Gore, Sean Parker thing yesterday? Just a handful. He was lamenting that you can't get on television without 5 million. Al Gore was lamenting that, it takes $5 million to go run ads. Their costs were minimal. And they've also done something tangible, I assume, which is to drive traffic to a website where somebody has the chance to raise money or begin to take steps in the right direction.
Well, I don't think anyone's going to argue that awareness is that's a bad thing. But if you look at, say, awareness, action, and then outcome, you got awareness.
Right.
You might get some minimal actions, but where's the back-end outcome that's going to change the lives in Africa? And I just don't see it.
Yeah, I got a similar point, and I wanted to just find a place to inject this today, and this seems like the right point.
Is it a self-promotional commercial?
No, it is not. not even close. The Gore-Parker thing was packed. How many of you wanted to get in and couldn't? Anybody? A couple? Packed. There was not an empty seat in that giant 5,000-seat place. And the topic was all politics, both Gore's initiatives and Sean Parker's initiative. And, you know, the sort of crescendo of it was Gore talking both about the effort to stop SOPA, and everyone participated in it, and there was great applause. And Gore said, "We have got to get money out of politics." Yeah! Okay! And then about 20 minutes later, they took the first question, and people started streaming out of the room. And within 10 or 15 minutes, while the former vice president of the United States and the co-founder of Network were talking, the room was two-thirds empty. And in fact, I have a video, or I had my audio recorder running because I thought I might blog or something about it. And you can hear the footsteps on the risers as Sean Parker laments the appalling apathy of the developer community. And I don't think he was aware of the irony of the people streaming out, and you could almost not hear him. So, I mean, my point here is, it's amazing that they turned out five or six, you know, that people wanted to hear this, and that there was a, you know, that it's kind of symptomatic or reflective of the real engagement that's occurred over the SOPA thing. And yet, boy, moving people to real activism is hard. Most ordinary people aren't terribly political. That's the challenge that every campaign and every, whether it's a political candidate or whatever, is up against. And, you know, it's just hard to change human nature. And at some point, you know, you keep, you know, this is just a paradox of anyone who cares about social change. If you let the perfect be the enemy of the good, you get nowhere.
All right. Let's move on a little bit to another data question. I was curious, what are some interesting stats you've heard recently or found recently in terms of social and politics?
You're a data guy.
I think the most interesting stat was Santorum receiving over 40,000 tweets in an hour on Super Tuesday. I think that was pretty interesting. Apart from that, I think we look at a lot of stats, especially sentiment and mentions. It's kind of interesting to see, like, before like a caucus or before like a primary, on how kind of sentiment comes close to what everybody else is predicting, who is going to win. But essentially, it is also a lot driven by like media writing about the candidates and so on. But I think the most interesting stat was just the sheer volume of tweets and mentions that Santorum received on Super Tuesday.
So related question. By the way, this is an apolitical panel, but we've had a lot of focus on the Republican candidates. Which one do you like out of all the ones that you know been in this cycle? Which one do you think was the most socially savvy? And if someone has a choice for least socially savvy, and if anyone has a reason why,
I'll take a shot at this. I'm going to assume that among the Republicans, the most socially savvy is Romney, if only because he's really the only one that's organized and that's savvy generally. The only one that's raised significant money and that has a real campaign organization and that seems to be concerned about actually winning the delegates to get to the nomination as opposed to, I'm not quite sure what the others have been doing. Auditioning for Fox or something, but I don't know. I mean, I do not know how well they're doing at exploiting social media. I assume they're throwing a lot of resources at it. We'll find out. Newt Gingrich loves to talk about social media, and he has, I think, by far more Twitter followers. And
yeah, he was on the suggested user list for Twitter. That was part of the thing.
Probably helped.
Yeah.
And he likes to talk about how he's going to run a different kind of campaign by using Facebook and Twitter, blah, blah, blah. And yet he's not raised much money except for one billionaire. He's not raising a lot of small dollar money. He's not succeeding outside of two states. So I don't know, you know, again, I can't sit in the room and tell you what they're doing exactly, but whatever they're doing isn't working.
I think Ron Paul has also done a pretty good job. He's used YouTube very effectively to get his videos out. He's been able to engage his audiences more by kind of giving like behind-the-scenes look at his campaign, posting pictures about his campaigns. And I think he's also really been able to activate his followers, actually. I know a friend who doesn't have a job, but he still donated $500 after just watching a YouTube video. I think that was pretty impressive.
Wow. You should have used that as your stat.
Yeah.
I don't have any more to
add. You know, I should add, this is promotional only, so I don't get hate mail. You're right about Ron Paul. I will. If this were going out live, I would get bombarded with email about the conspiracy to ignore Ron Paul.
Let me tweet about this 1 second.
Yeah, please, because I haven't enough people telling me I don't deserve to
live. Right, second, what are your Twitter handles, just so everyone's tweeting? What are your Twitter handles?
Vishal S.
Vishal S. You're mystery.
Mystery pollster.
At Ben Parin.
I'm at Chris, K-H-R-I-S.
Okay.
Chris.
But Paul is very well organized, and I deserve the award, I think, for the best social media. He just does seem to be in a different category generally in terms of what he's trying to accomplish.
I will say one more thing on that. When you talk about auditioning for Fox, they pay a hell of a lot more than the presidency. That's for sure. So just one or two more questions, and then we're going to open to the audience. Please, please, please start thinking about your questions. This is about you guys and what you want to ask. Quick question. Which social media platform is going to be the next hot thing for politicians?
Don't you have to answer Pinterest in the place?
I'd like to use my lifeline. I wish I had a couple more hours to just ask the politically active people at this conference what they think is going to make a difference, because I think that'll be the answer. I think you collectively, this community, knows more about that than I do. Which is a lame answer, but it's what I'm going with.
Did anyone have an opinion on that? No? No one knows? No one wants to predict? Oh, you have a prediction. Prediction. Wait, I'm curious why you think... Why do you think Pinterest? Well, is it real Romney or fake Romney? I don't even know anymore.
It's visual, and it's fast, and there's already a user base.
Yeah.
We're doing the engagement part here. This is social media. We engage.
It's visual, it's fast, and it is largely women. And there's going to be a huge focus on trying to close the gender gap on the Republican side, and a huge focus on keeping the gender gap on the Democratic side. Yeah. I saw a little bit of it. There was an anti-Romney post that was pretty funny. It was a... I think the title was Romney's Cars, and it was just a visual of a bunch of fancy cars. And then the Romney campaign, or somebody who is friendly to Romney, almost immediately put another one up that was Romney meeting with regular people. So I think it's going to go.
Entering.
I guess I'm just not sure how it is that Pinterest would help, though. So to me, Pinterest being visual is great for some stuff, but it's not educating me on why somebody is or isn't a good candidate. To me, a visual show of, how somebody has a lot of cars or how they've created starving children in China is like those SPCA commercials with all the sad dogs. Like, I just turn it off because I don't want to look at horrific images, because it's not, like... We all see that stuff, but it doesn't inspire you to move. Like, I need a call to action. I need a piece of education. I need more information beyond what wedding dress Romney would pick, or like what cupcakes he would bake, because that's mostly what I see on Pinterest.
I think we just fired off a debate here. Perfect. Quick response there, and then we'll keep moving.
So the ASPCA is actually a client, and they raise... a huge amount of money. It does cause a response. It does. It's not what I respond to, but I'm here, so I'm not as a focus group of one. I'm not really representative.
Yeah, that's right. There's a representative from Photo Philanthropy right here. The former managing director, and they're
you've been called out. Congratulations!
And they would agree with you. They use it's a great organization. It essentially professional photographers that donate their time and will take photos for a nonprofit in, say, Africa or what have you, and that nonprofit normally wouldn't be able to get a visual of their work, and they use those photos to move and inspire. You know, whether it's donation or action or what have you. So it absolutely does, a photo does work. And just look at the aggressive growth of Pinterest and Instagram and Path and all of these things. These streams of photos are as important as a textual tweet, and they do move people to do things. So I would completely agree with you on
and
that.
And my sense of, I'm not someone who's helped a campaign use social media, so I'm speaking as an observer. But my sense of it is that social media platforms work for campaigns because they're one of many ways of reaching out and engaging with people who wouldn't ordinarily connect with a political campaign. That's the key part. The tool is if you're an Obama activist in 2008, the campaign was trying to use every social media platform to encourage you to communicate with your friends, people you know, your social networks, and basically raise awareness of the campaign and help bring more people into the fold. And so if you can communicate with Pinterest, if you can create a fan site or whatever that reaches out to somebody who doesn't know about Romney or whatever, then it works.
The other, I think it was your former publisher, Mashable, put out an article, was it maybe last week, saying that Pinterest was driving more referral traffic than Twitter. So that's I don't know where the stats
it's drive it's driving a lot of traffic is the, I think the big key here, right?
It's a crap load of traffic, right? So whether again, not to hammer you back on your point, but for whatever reason, whether it's don't give her back the mic. But for whatever reason, visual or it's women mainly demographic, I don't know. It's driving a ton of traffic, even if it's in the ballpark of Twitter. I mean, consider Pinterest wasn't even around a year ago. That's pretty crazy.
All right. What's you get two sentences. That's and then we're going to move on.
So actually, I just left the Pinterest panel with the co-founder or the founder of Pinterest, and he was just talking about this, and I've also lost my voice because of South By. But I mean, he created Pinterest as a lifestyle, as a lifestyle showing off for you to pin boards. And I'm just not sure where political campaigns can start showing what kind of lifestyle choices within their images they're going to be able to show. So maybe the future of what electing that particular politician will have and how much capacity people have for pictures of babies and American flags for people that, showing those
things. You are too long, too run-on sentences.
It happens.
All right. So one more question before we put it to the audience. And this is one that I've thought a lot about, and I don't have the answer to this one. Maybe you wise wizards, you have the answer to this one. Has social media made politicians better or worse? Has it made our country more or less polarized?
That's a good question.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to send it to the audience.
Well, I'll grab on the second part. I mean, I think it's been one of many things that's made polarization. It feels a little bit like accelerant for polarization. That is, it's easier for all of us to stay within our little gated communities of news sources and people we agree with. For better or for worse, most political news for much of the last century was delivered by mainstream sources that were that broadcast to, whether it's a newspaper or a television network, that everybody within a given city or nationwide listen to. So in the 70s, 80% of televisions were tuned to one of the then three major network evening news programs every night. Everybody watched Walter Cronkite or the others. Now it's our audiences are much more fragmented, and I think Twitter and social media is just a piece of that you can now, I do it. My morning news is looking at my Twitter feed. That's my first step before I look at anything. I barely look at front pages anymore. What's happening right now is me looking at my Twitter list. Now, I would like to think that I've got a balanced set of sources, but the reality is it probably reflects my point of view, and I think that's been
It's interesting. I mean, I'm in, obviously, social media. I have a company that's based on social media. But at the end of the day, if I'm honest, you know, 5 years ago, before Twitter or whatever, 7 years ago, have my political views changed? You know, not really. I ingest data differently. I broadcast differently. That's fine. But, I mean, can anyone in this room say that they're systemically or philosophically changed? Right? I mean, raise your hand if you now vote differently than you did 5 years ago because you use Pinterest or something like that. Right? It's just another mode of communication. It's another way to reach out to people. It's an accelerant. It's powerful, yes, but it also has very real limitations in terms of changing hearts and minds, so to speak. There's someone raised a
point. I wanted to. Yeah, you it changed your voting habits. But did it change your political views?
It has changed.
Mm. We don't have to tell us how you vote, although you're welcome to.
Interesting.
And it might. Yeah, go ahead.
There's a hand in the back as well. So. Yeah, I think you have diversity. You look at your Twitter feed. Maybe 5 years ago, I would have looked at specific news sites, and now I use Google News, which is just headlines coming by. So I look at news from Asia or newspapers in Europe or Kansas or whatever. So that's a social media has allowed a broader landscape of data to come in. As I said earlier, it's an accelerant, so the data happens faster. It sometimes is a miscorrection, right? The data is wrong when it first spikes, but then since there's this sort of crowdsourcing correction, you get transparency a bit quicker than you would in the old days, right? The old days, someone could call up the editor-in-chief of the Washington Post and maybe squash a story or something like that or skew things. Excuse my language, but that shit doesn't happen as much anymore. So I think transparency and acceleration and all of these things are happening. But, I stick with my original position. I mean, I'm philosophically, and politically the same person I was 5 years ago. I haven't flip-flopped, and I'll be running for election. Just kidding.
You have the announcement here first.
This is my coming out party, right?
I think my sense of it is it's less about people flipping from one point of view to another or having some fundamental change in their political outlook than about a hardening of attitudes that were already there. Some of this goes on for most people over the course of your lives. I mean, if you, don't need to raise your hands, but how many of you hadn't voted before 5 years ago? I would suspect that social media has made a big contribution to your socialization. That happens. I mean, if you voted for the first time in 2004, this is old social science. We come of age politically in our 20s and early 30s. That's typical. So, it's been a part of your socialization. But the one place where I actually have data is on political polarization. When Ronald Reagan was president, Republicans liked him, Democrats didn't. But the degree of that was mild compared to the way Republicans hate Barack Obama and Democrats loved him, literally. The job approval ratings that Obama has among Democrats are higher than what Reagan had among Republicans. His disapproval is higher among Republicans than Reagan had among Democrats. And it's not an abrupt thing. It's been a long 30-year trend, which I think is in part because of the fragmentation of the media. Audience?
All right, questions? And I'm going to remind our panelists, please keep it short so we can answer as many questions as we can. We have it right there.
I have a question that I think goes back to what you guys were talking about earlier about awareness versus action. So some of the things that have come out recently, and I know like the viral heat data shows, is whether or not you're getting a lot of mentions or a lot of online play doesn't necessarily reflect people's end polling outcome. So in terms of how social media is actually having an effect on end polling data, do you think that awareness, noise, and things like that will eventually start to either drive people to the polls or create poll changes, or are we just going to continue to see? I mean, specifically, one of the reasons that people called out is social media is typically used by the young, and the young typically don't vote. So is this going to continue to be a trend, or as social media gets more traction, will it actually drive people there? But right now we're not seeing like Rick Santorum and Ron Paul getting a ton of mentions, but we probably won't actually see them in the end race.
There's a lot there. Yes, younger people don't vote as often as older people. That's typical. And online buzz doesn't necessarily translate into turnout. The Paul campaign is, as you mentioned, is the best example of that. And I think that has, that's partly of the function that Paul's followers are extremely engaged online. And so their presence is amplified within the sort of online realm in a way that it isn't elsewhere. But it's also, it says something about where he fits in the Republican Party. I mean, many of his supporters aren't Republicans in a lot of states, which is why his vote tends to be really low when there are closed primaries that only Republicans can participate in. Now, as sort of feeling apathetic or cynical about whether all of these tools can help move turnout, I mean, I think they're tools. They've added to the toolbox that campaigns have. They're another way of reaching out. And part of it's just an evolution in media that, you know, we're campaigns and politics are adapting to the media choices that people are making. One thing that surprises people is that the trend, the long-term turn in voter turnout is actually up, not down. Depends on where you measure from. But if you go back, I think it's to the 50s, the last two or three elections have been higher than in the presidential elections in 08 and 04 were higher than in most of the presidential elections going back to three decades.
Let's see. Over here.
Yeah, my point wasn't that there is an action. Clearly, the Obama campaign was. It's just the tools themselves are micro tools, and they are best applied to micro actions. That was my only point. When it gets complicated, like Africa or like Occupy, is where these social media 140 characters does. Most people cannot describe what Occupy is. What is the message of Occupy? It's a fucking multi-paragraph, complicated thing. And to solve it, you need to have real politics, real policy, right? And that ground game is work. That's legal, you know, bills that have to get pushed through Congress, et cetera, et cetera. And so yes, you can get a $5 donation, and yes, you can get someone to show up to a rally, and yes, you can get them to vote. That's very worthy things to get done. It's just when the job is a bit bigger, how do you keep a triple ADD community focused on something long enough to solve a problem like AIDS in Africa?
And I appreciate your pushing back on my first comment.
I don't. It kind of hurt.
I really don't, you know, I don't disagree. I was not trying to say that politics is more polarized because of Twitter. I think Twitter is one of many things. And so I think we're way more agreed than disagreed on that. I have just one, I want to just sort of add a thought, which is on Occupy. I'd love to see somebody actually go back and do the media analysis on this. But I would argue that one of the reasons why Occupy exploded nationally was because of some cell phone video of some protesters getting hit with pepper spray in New York that traveled virally overnight through social media and crossing to you know, platforms like Huffington Post and others and mainstream. And that wouldn't have happened 10 or 15 years ago. I mean,
well, you had the Rodney King video, so that was 15 years ago, and so I mean, yeah, people get excited when they see
different
a photo
though. That
or
was
video.
On a. I mean, yes, that's true. That was.
I'm not sure how it's different, but in any case, carry on. It's again, I take a contrarian view on social media just because I'm in social media, and I wanted to at least point out its weaknesses. You know, we know the strength. You know, walking into a conference like this and talking about the strengths of social media, yawn. Yeah, we know it's freaking powerful as hell. But also to point out where does it fall down, or what other tools need to come in place to apply long-term sustained effort on something. You know, not every problem again is 140 characters. Sometimes they're a bit tougher. And how do you mobilize and keep people on point for quarter after quarter after quarter to solve a problem like poverty or what have you? All right, carry on. Who's next?
Let's do it. Who is next? We'll go right here and then we'll go here next.
Sure,
it's the right 15 people. It's probably plenty.
I mean, I'm not sure they had more than 15 people in the Chicago headquarters working on social media in 08. To me, 15 people in the executive office of the White House working on social media is pretty incredible.
Ooh, that's awesome.
Given that, you know, they have a
we're creating
fair number
jobs.
Of other things.
Yeah, we're creating jobs.
Job creation is happening.
I did catch I was there for about 20, 25 minutes of that. I don't know if this is a fair thing to say about that office, but it's easier to be focused in a campaign than when running the government of the United States. Your goals for the former are a whole lot narrower, and you know there's one person in charge, and you don't have to deal with Congress. You run your campaign. There's a lot they're trying to do, and I can see how they may not be quite as focused in a lot of ways in terms of message and communication as a campaign would be.
You know, we're slightly off topic on this. We're not self-promotional, but at Echo, we're doing a lot of work with social TV. Where the audience is essentially participating in the outcome of the show, et cetera. What I think would be interesting is to see that during the debates, right? How do you use social media tools to have the audience participate? I mean, at home, you're throwing popcorn and stuff at the TV, right, because they're full of it and all this other stuff. But it'd be great to get more and more of, you know, the tweets and questions and et cetera from the audience or corrections from the community as part of these debates and not just, sorry, nothing against moderators, but not just a moderator.
No offense taken.
Yeah, that's right. Only this moderator. Chris, we were at the Current TV. There was the last election cycle, and we were at Current TV headquarters, and we're watching the staff curate tweets, and then slam them into the on-air broadcast. And did anyone see any of this where the tweets are coming in on top of the screens? That's interesting for me, right? It's like a mom in Missouri saying, you know, whatever, this isn't going to affect me or whatever. And so if nothing, social media shows you it was already there. I mean, these conversations were happening in the kitchen and whatever anyway, but to see this stuff pulled out and laid in real time on top of a screen while someone's talking, that's interesting, right, and powerful.
It's interesting. One of the things famous anecdotes within political science when we talk about debates is the debate between Jimmy Carter and Gerald Ford in 1976. I'm sure you all remember that very clearly. Ford screwed up and had an answer about Poland where he said he didn't think Poland was dominated by the Soviet Union, and that blew up after the debate. That was all. But all the news was about for a day or two, and there were studies done that showed that there were a couple surveys done that night among people who were watching who thought Ford did okay. And two or three days later, everyone agreed Ford had lost. So the theory is that the coverage matters more than what actually happens in the debate.
It may have been that the audience didn't know the answer to that question either.
Possible. But it sort of makes me wonder how many people are starting to watch debates like a junkie like me does with two screens, with the debate on. And then there were times, and I will admit as somebody who used to work for Democrats, that Twitter was like how I got through 16 Republican debates live. And there were times where I missed things that were happening on the big screen because I was so engaged in my Twitter.
Okay, was this back over here? Yes?
That last question is really interesting. Does anyone have an answer to it?
Well, I mean, I think it gets to the point you've been making, which is that the tools alone don't change the world. It takes people to change. I mean, a hammer doesn't build a house. But, you know, if you have an air hammer.
Tweet that.
You know, if you have one of those super duper, I watched a house across my street being built, and boy, they move fast with those, you know, quick tools. But I think that's the point. They don't build themselves.
Right, you have. That's exactly right. An issue where you would have to redo how we vote. I mean, we don't even have direct elections, right? We have this whole weird.
The Electoral College.
No one here can even explain how a president gets elected in the first place. But to change all of that infrastructure is going to. I mean, that's going to take decades.
So it's an infrastructure problem. So Twitter cannot rewrite constitutions.
No, it can get awareness on it. That awareness can bleed into action, and then at some level there's an outcome. And I just think that if I had any advice for the campaigns, it would be to take each of these tools and understand what it can do and what it can't do. And I believe it's extremely good with micro actions and then less so with sustained ones. So if I was to use Twitter, I would try to get people to rally. I would try to get people to vote. I would try to get a $10 donation. I would try to have people retweet my message. I mean, these are all Twitter-style actions, and they can happen very quickly. Now, in aggregate, you could say 50 of those micro-campaigns produced an outcome. Okay, that's fine. But don't expect Twitter to solve these infrastructure problems alone.
And I just have had one thought, which really goes to the specific of your question, which is that I think that what holds back a third party from happening is a third party that represents something different than the other two, other than we need a third party. So, you know, if more than 15% of Americans sort of fit with Ron Paul's libertarian view, which is very distinctive, and doesn't really fit within the Republican Party. If that were more like 40 or 50%, we'd have a third party. And he'd be, you know, trying to get on all 50 state ballots right now. But I think that's the limit. It's about politics, not about some shortcoming of social media or any other campaign tool.
Okay, one or two more questions, and then we'll have to wrap up the panel. All right, we have right here. Gamification in politics.
Gamification, so 2011.
Oh.
I want a badge.
No.
Totally. How many people tweeted about any of the primaries so far? How many
question.
Political tweets at all? Excellent. Would you have tweeted more if you'd gotten a badge? No, probably. Yeah, probably.
I don't know. I think within...
You could hand out badges if you checked in at a rally and all of that stuff.
Well,
I think
if you gave me a $5 coupon to Chipotle, I probably had done it more.
You'd do anything for that.
I almost wonder if my Barack Obama, if they didn't have sort of early versions of that 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, they constructed their own
I love
network,
it. I think it's an awesome
partly
idea.
To encourage that kind of positive reinforcement. I don't think they were giving away badges, but I think they were doing things.
Yeah, Foursquare. You can partner with Foursquare and do yeah, no problem.
Check in at the rally.
Check in at the rally.
Let everybody know you're there.
Way over here, quick.
What are some things with the risk of stereotyping, you know, that the Republicans can do? Obviously, Democrats in the last election really did a lot of fantastic stuff with social media, you know, not only at the national level, but the state politics level that, you know, the Republicans can do, given that their audience tends to be a little more, a little older.
I mean, my sense is the tools are the tools, and they're not partisan. So I think, to your point, okay, if their base is older, that calls for some slightly different approaches. But it's not as if people over 40 aren't online or in Facebook, or they are. And I assume that they're headed in that direction. So I don't think there's anything sort of radically different for the right to do. And there was a panel here on Saturday. Which I wasn't, I didn't get to come here for 4 days, that was run by a Republican consultant named Patrick Ruffini. Was anybody here at that? Hardcore. And, you know, they're actively involved in working with Republican campaigns on that very question.
It's interesting how long it takes for things to die, right? Obviously in this group here, very much on the innovating side, right? We're the 1%. Technologically, these people in this room, you get smartphones and all this other stuff, and you tweet. But so it's easy to forget how important, say, the robocalling or the little flyers are, right? These things probably will move more votes than tweets do in this election, sadly, right? I mean, if you look at things like the music industry, there's still $15 billion a year in CD sales. Like, who the fuck is buying a CD, right? I mean, I don't know. Really,
I use them as frisbees.
I throw them around the house. It's like ridiculous. But yet, there's still these people, wherever they are, that are buying these things. Where do they put them, right? It doesn't even fit. But so
you haven't tried hard enough.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, and if you succeed, what happens? So it's like, it's interesting, because we're all, you know, on the edge and changing the planet. And we will. Don't be wrong. We will change the planet. These things will happen. But it's also kind of freaky how big of a monster behind us it will, you know, it'll take decades for this stuff to kind of wind in and change. So just interesting.
All righty. One more question, and then I have the final question for the panel. So you should all be scared. Get shaking in your boots for it.
I'm not even wearing boots. Echo. I'm sorry.
That's fine. No, go ahead. Knock yourself out. You got to do that.
I think more data mining tools to really understand.
Data mining.
I love it.
I can't believe it.
Everyone should read
fire
the Huffington
all three
Post.
Of us now. Throw stuff.
I've lost control of this panel.
I am the worst person in Austin to ask that question.
No.
All righty. So, final question for all of you, and I am only giving you two sentences to make to answer this question, and it is just give one prediction for social media's role in the 2012 election cycle.
I think a candidate will raise over $1 billion using social media.
Holy cow.
That's a lot of money.
$1 billion.
One word, Pinterest.
I already used that earlier. You can't do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I know.
No.
That's prediction.
I was just going to say, bigger. That's the safest prediction in the world. It will be bigger.
You're over two sentence limit. I'm sorry.
Okay, good. I'm done.
Yeah. I think you'll see more interaction. A lot of people have talked about before an event and after event, but I think you'll see more social media wound into live events, whether it's a debate or whether it's during the voting cycle or what have you.
All right. Everybody, help me give a round of applause to our amazing panelists.